Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 70 of Season 3 Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off this week, week 14 of this show, is a future MXM host, who's already done a few. But he's, you know, he'll be back. And also an independent filmmaker named Brett Stillo. Welcome back to the show, Brett. It feels like I just spoke to you just a few hours ago. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's funny. Yes, it's fun. It, time space dilation. It's what you expect in MXM. You know,
that's true.
Strange. It's very strange. But yeah, it's been a fun week, my friend. Thanks for having me on your show. And wow, yeah, it's like. 5 days suddenly goes by like that, and you know, I'm always faced with like, I want to do one more. You know, we know what's coming up next week. It's like, I want to talk more about that, but I'm happy to have been here this week.
It's part of the problem. You can't have, you know, everyone on every single episode, you know, as much as you'd like to, you know. I agree. I also have had a lot of fun this week. And, you know, I hope to podcast with you in the future, you know, for other shows that I end up doing next season, the following season. Who knows where things will lead. But bottom line is this week was fun. And hopefully my listeners will like you also. Because, you know, if I get a really negative feedback, then I won't have you back. But now I'm kidding. You think I listen to what the listeners will say? Come on. If they say get rid of Stillo, then I don't know. We'll see.
Well, we have that in common with McClane. We're maverick cops.
There you go.
Sure, we can tie that into minute 70. What happens in minute 70, sir?
All right, so minute 70 begins with Al juggling the situation and ends with the limo screeching along. So yesterday we ended things off with John seeing the lights and, you know, looking at his 3 cigarettes that are left in the pack and trying to figure out what's going on. So he called Al on their party line, which we've talked about a few times this week. I've talked about it many times before. I'm sure I will talk about it in the future, that, you know, everyone can listen to this conversation. And, you know, John had said, what's wrong? What's going on? And so the response that Al gives is, I said, I'll talk to you later, Roy. Now that sentence got cut off. And this minute begins with him saying, to you later, Roy. And then he goes, if you are what I think you are, then you'll know when to listen, when to shut up, and when to pray. Now, I love that line. I think it's a great line. You know, later on we'll talk about it, that it is word for word from the script, though. I'll let that cat out of the bag here. Hmm. But, you know, it's great screenwriting. You know, to put that in there, that this character, you know, we know that Al does not agree what Robinson and, you know, the SWAT team are doing right now, but he still, you know, toes the line and is, you know, showing, I guess, LAPD solidarity or LAPD bravado, showing that, you know, he still stands behind them despite the fact that he doesn't agree with the situation. He doesn't agree with the decision to do it this way.
Yeah. And I think he's, you know, I think he's also thinking, you know, he's also looking out for John, you know, but it's like, you know, he's sort of just, stay frosty, man.
Yeah.
And hold tight. And I think one thing you can say about Al Powell is that he's got a really good read on people.
Yes.
This character, I think, just knows people. And he's like, I don't know you, but you got to trust me on this. I think what's the word I'm thinking of? It's not a faith bridge, but it's like, you got to trust me on this one, man. You just got to put your faith in me.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that surprises me, I mean, again, we'll find out, we'll talk about this in future weeks. The fact that, you know, he used to be a beat cop and now he's no longer on the street because of the accident and everything like that. But, you know, it makes you wonder what type of job he's doing now that he's still able to, you know, hold up his end of, you know, being street smart. and stuff like that. You know, like, even if he is just, you know, he mentions a point to John later on, he'll say, you know, what, you don't think it's noble to be pushing papers across the desk? And John actually says, no, I don't, which, you know, we'll talk about that in a few weeks. We'll dissect that conversation. But the idea is that, okay, now, you know, what type of job is he doing now? But he's still able, after maybe 10 years, you know, who knows how long ago. I mean, I think the script mentions specifically how long ago the accident was, but the movie doesn't. I think it says like 10 or 12 years, something like that, if I remember correctly. But the movie doesn't mention specifically. He says, I had an accident. You know, he doesn't mention when or anything like that. But we assume it wasn't last week. You know,
yeah.
Reginald Bell Johnson, great actor, but this character is not fit. You know, it's not like this happened just a few months ago, and now he's, you know, this is something that he's been able to, you know, to have his desk job and eat his Twinkies as much as he wants over the last few years. You know, even though his wife is pregnant and likes Twinkies, but when you look at it, so it makes me wonder what type of job this type of character would be satisfied doing if he can't be on the street. You know, because the way that he talks to John and the way that he talks to Hans, you know, and when he was on the radio and stuff like that, it shows that he hasn't lost his demeanor. You know, he still knows how to deal with situations, I guess you can say.
Yeah. It's, you know, having not really thought a lot about the character of Al, you see where this is his reawakening. You know, he probably hasn't even thought about anything like this in a long time. And now it's just like in the heat of battle, he's becoming the cop he used to be.
Wow. I didn't think about that perspective also. That's great. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I like that.
When you hear that, you know, when you hear his speech, how's it go again? Stay tight.
No, he goes, if you are what I think you are, then you'll know when to listen, when to shut up, and when to pray.
Yeah. That's kind of what you say when you just before you jump out of the plane, too.
Yeah.
So,
that's true. That's very true.
Yeah, pull the ripcord.
But that's more or less what they're doing here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
John knows less than Al does, but Al knows that they're planning an assault right now, and that assault, you're basically jumping out of the airplane.
You totally,
you know,
yeah.
This is D-Day for them.
Yeah, it's totally go time. And yeah, I think it's a real reawakening of this character. I'm imagining, and kind of thinking about, you know, people I've known who have, something has happened and they've just, you know, set stuff aside, given up on stuff. You know, they don't want to be reminded of what happened. And yeah, maybe he's, you know, organizing files or something like that. But in this situation, yeah, it's kind of interesting. That's like, you know, there's no wiggling out of this. It's like, with this guy, it's instinctive. It's intuitive. It's like, you know, he's using his instincts and he's not even thinking twice about this. Except later on when he does have that moment to reflect and he opens up to John.
Right.
Which again
brings us back to the whole idea that this is a party line. So later on he's going to open himself up, but he's opening himself up to everybody.
Oh, you know, how?
You know, Thornburg's going to do a piece just on Al, you know, about policemen that accidentally shoot kids, you know, holding ray guns. You know?
Yeah.
Not something fun. And then John's response is, Jesus Christ, you're coming in, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then he goes, Christ, Powell, I told you what kind of people you're dealing with here. Now, forget about the fact that this is, you know, we're going to go back to the whole idea of it being a party line. And obviously this is something that is needed for the plot. But basically John just told Hans and all his men that if you didn't notice, the police are about to make an assault.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's as if we didn't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. That's a good
Great.
Point. Oh, it's, you know, I've worked on, you know, some small scripts, you know, nothing major, but, you know, I do some screenwriting. And, you know, there's a time when I get into a situation where it's like, it's kind of, you know, kind of a similar thing where it's like, well, geez, if my characters are doing this, then everyone else is going to know, or some kind, you know, where you put yourself, sometimes you put yourself behind the eight ball, but it's like, I got to get to the next scene. So, you know, sometimes you just tread across thin ice, just because, you know, you got to get to the, you know, there's a bigger prize up ahead. But yeah, I know that feeling when you have to, you know, like, I'm going to ignore this for now. There are a number of logic traps here, but it's more important to keep the script rolling and hopefully it isn't something so glaring that, you know, it just really defies logic. But yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. But at the same time, and again, we're sort of in agreement that, like, let's hope that that there were at least some intelligent discussions about, you know, it's basically a party line, and yeah. Somebody like, say, McTiernan saying, yeah, I know, but, you know, we've got to keep things rolling, and the timing of this script, you know, they are juggling hand grenades in terms of Thornburg is looking for answers. Holly is, Gruber suspects Holly. He knows something's afoot. There are, you know, one thing that's amazing about, and a little intimidating about Die Hard is there are multiple clocks ticking.
Yes.
And when one alarm bell goes off, it's going to affect the others. So, yeah, again, I could kind of picture somebody saying, hey, how are we going to explain that only they can hear it? You know, when we know a previous scene, Argyle can hear it, or he can hear them, but how come the terrorists don't? And that's where I feel like that's probably McTiernan saying, but we got to keep things going. And if we could figure out a way to explain this or a way around this, a workaround, but that might be a whole extra five pages. I'll take the devil's advocate of, you know, maybe with the terrorists all doing their job, maybe that is a goof on their part. You know, they just, yeah. You know, there is something to be said for human error. That, you know, we mentioned Theo, who might have thought of that, but he's too busy trying to open the safe. So unfortunately, there's no guy on the terrorist team named Sparks or Radar. So, you know, if and again, you don't know. No criminal's plan is perfect, so maybe we can just say that's on Hans. You know, he's paying attention to everything else, but, you know, you didn't think to.
Well, no, they never thought that someone. I mean, again, if they knew that the FBI would be involved eventually and the police would be involved at some point, yeah. So then if they're using CBs, so that they then would know that people can listen to it. So again, that even opens. That opens the Pandora box even more. That Han should have thought about this beforehand. You know, he should have gone to Radio Shack and bought, you know, CBs that have codes.
Yeah.
You know, at one point he says, "I thought we asked for radio silence," and then John says to him, "Well, I didn't get that notice on the bulletin board, Hans." But but radio silence doesn't help either.
Yeah.
You know, because at some point they're going to be talking. You know, or let's put it this way: if the idea is to only have radio silence the entire time, then why have the CBs?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I know. It's like classic double jeopardy when you're plotting, yes, something where, sometimes you've written the script and you've got this whole trajectory going, and then you realize, you know, oh crap, there was a car in the garage the whole time. You know, you realize,
Yeah,
You know, and then
exactly.
it's like, yeah, then it's, you know, that requires some doubling back. Yeah, I mean, again, they could have spent some time explaining the radio and maybe made, you know, just an added element of suspense and tension in the plot. But I'd like I said, I'd like to think that it was something they debated. It was, you know, if it was a decision to just say ignore it, it wasn't without considering options. But that would be great if someday you can meet John McTiernan and say, hey, how the radio thing though. See what he had to say.
I'll have to try to remember if I ever meet him. You know, that's what I'll ask him about.
The punch.
Actually, I don't think he's the person. I think you can ask the script writers, Jim Stewart. You know,
yeah, like, or the two screenwriters. But it would be interesting to get their reaction. You might get a head slap. I know. I wanted to do another pass, but you know there.
We were hoping people wouldn't notice.
We were hoping people wouldn't notice, or. But still,
we never thought that someone would be doing a movies by minute, you know, dissection of this movie for the second time.
You know, just a war story. You know, a couple of years back, I was involved in Jim O'Kane's North by Northwest show,
yeah.
And you know, one thing I love to talk about was, you know, here's a movie made in 1959. I mean, seeing a movie on television was even kind of a rarity, but the whole concept of any kind of a reviewing, because, yeah, I mean, if you watch, and this is a movie made by Alfred Hitchcock, you know, it's sort of made, it's kind of a hot rod of a movie. It just is going to go down the track once and that's it. I can't imagine someone watching this movie over and over, you know, and you watch certain scenes and that, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there are those inevitable, why didn't you call the cops first? You know, like, I had a lot of fun imagining trying to explain to the ghost of Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah, there, you can stream movies, you can watch them over and over, and you can isolate specific scenes. Why would you do that? Don't you have anything better to do, young man? Or Cary Grant, you know. What? You know, same scene over and over. You're crazy, man. You're crazy. So, but again, it's movie forensics. It's the fun of
yes.
taking it apart and disassembling it. And you know, it's fascinating the way, you know, these jigsaw puzzles are constructed, aren't they?
Yes, it really is. It really is. Now, also, John says, you know, I told you what kind of people you're dealing with here. Now, do you really think John has a full grasp on what type of people they're dealing with? You know, he's. I mean, it's a given fact that the LAPD doesn't, but John doesn't either. You know, he doesn't, like, he says it later on with Ellis. He says to Hans, I know what you're like, but Ellis doesn't know what he's dealing with. You know, it's like, has John ever dealt with terrorists before? You know, he's a New York City police officer.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just purely, like, I think that's half adrenaline and half, was it, who was shooting at him? Through the table.
No, that was Marco.
Marco, okay. You know, and as I recall, Marco's saying some insulting things.
Where he gives him advice when you have a chance to shoot someone, do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't hesitate.
You know, and I think, you know, part of the fun of Die Hard is the pure adrenaline of one of these terrorists is trying to kill John. And, you know, John, you know, as we all know, John gets his ass kicked one end of the building to the other. But there's that gleeful when he takes one of them out after them tormenting him. It's, you know, this is a great bully movie, you know,
yes.
Because the terrorists are such ass. So,
yes.
Yeah,
they really
so
are.
When he gets it back to him, it's like, oh, yeah, that, you know. So, yeah, I think there is a, like. You know, he doesn't have time to say this to Al, but it's like, this guy shot at me through a table. He was mean to me, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah, he probably has no idea about their true motives or, you know, their background, but he just knows that he's dealt with like what, two or three of them, and they've been very disagreeable but in their temperament. You know, they're just.
Yeah, but I think I don't think that's what he's referring to here. I think he's referring to the fact that you're dealing with some very dangerous people that will stop at nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's more along the lines of what it is that he's trying to give over.
Yeah. But I think he's also he has had some first time life or death experiences with him. So I know what you're saying too, but I feel like it's John's, you know, it's his adrenaline. Probably also, I mean, what's keeping him alive is he goes off, you know, he is your classic maverick cop, you know?
Yes.
for sure. It's interesting because you can picture John McClane in a, you know, in the captain's office. And, you know, you know, John, we want you to move on to the case. What do you mean? I'm this close to breaking it. I just, you know, I'm like, no, or you got to leave the suspect alone. I know this is the guy, you know, he's probably just, you know, he's running on intuition, adrenaline, and cigarettes.
Yes,
but yeah, still there is a, like, you don't know who that, you do bring up that question, you know, John, I mean, I don't think John really knows. Yeah, he doesn't. That's one thing that plays against him upcoming is he doesn't see the full picture.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. But he couldn't, no one could. That's the whole idea here. And Hans couldn't see the full picture either. You know, he couldn't see the fact that he would have, you know, John there to cause all these problems. Right. So as we move along, the assault then begins and we get a great aerial shot as we hear Robinson say, all right, let's load him up. Blue, go. And we get an aerial shot of the whole staging area. We see there are two ambulances, a SWAT van, three fire trucks, nine police cars. Two of them are unmarked cars with bubbles. Two of them are regular unmarks. There are also three tractors that are, looking there that are in that area because it's a construction area also, obviously. And then we get a shot of Al, who actually looks like he's hyperventilating, you know, the way that he's looking at everything going on. And then the shot changes and we see Hans again. And we hear, you know, Hans gets up from his seat and moves towards the window. And then we see one of the characters light up a cigarette. This is Christoph, right in front of the computer. And then we hear Hans say, so they'll be coming. Everyone get ready. Theo, you are the eyes now. Yeah, and then we see that, Theo turns on the surveillance cameras to check whatever things are going on. We get a shot of Eddie also getting ready. He's still, you know, wearing his, front desk jacket. And he, uses a key and closes the two portcullises on both sides. You know, we see both sides getting ready for this assault. You know, and I like the way they do it because, you know, they do the right left thing very well. You know, you get a shot from, you know, that everyone from the police are moving to the right and everyone from the terrorists are moving towards the left. You know, and things that they're doing. And then we see another shot of some of the SWAT guys where four of them start their assault. And we hear Rivers, yo, begin your reconnoiter. I've never heard that word before. Reconnoiter. Have you ever heard that word before?
I have, but that's funny. I think
it's a little strange.
It seems like reconnaissance would be better. But anyway, reconnoiter.
Yeah. Yeah. No, reconnaissance means that you're just checking the area. The idea, I guess, is to move forward.
Okay.
You know, and then we get a shot of John, you know, who's running around the room, you know, looking at different windows to try and see where he gets a better view from everything. And as he's looking, he sees down that things are happening and he goes, oh, shit. Yeah. And then we get a shot of the limo slowly moving in the garage. And that's pretty much how this minute
Yeah,
ends
lots of
with the way
transitions. Yeah,
that they
it's
did
getting
it.
ready for an even a big scene coming up. I'm a,
Yeah, they're showing that
yeah.
everyone's
Now
gonna live.
my compliments to you. I tried to look up. I did not find the name Eddie for the terrorist who I nicknamed Huey Lewis, because.
Yes, numerous people have nicknamed him Huey Lewis. One of my guests from I think it was about a month ago he was on, Kurt Kenny. He's actually a documentary filmmaker who's doing a documentary on
Oh,
Huey
very
Lewis,
cool.
and he himself said that he looks like Huey Lewis. Now, yes, he definitely looks like Huey Lewis. There's no question about that.
I just came to that conclusion. That's
No, in the movie they refer to him as
Eddie.
Eddie. He
Yeah.
is referred to. We actually already heard it because when Al shows up at the front door, so Hans talks to Eddie and says, "Eddie," and he goes, "I was waiting for you to call me."
Right. So. But still, I my
So yes,
compliment.
but it definitely looks like Huey Lewis.
Yeah, and then,
There's no question
yeah,
about
that's
that.
it brings to mind one, fun little. I think it's a just a Hollywood convention. Because as I was reviewing, I looked at sort of a still taken on the set. The whole gang, they're a good looking gang, They're like it's they're just like remember the International Mail catalog, they could all model for International Mail, Gudinov and we are known for our ruthless tactics and high cheekbones. The only
Yes.
one who looks a little sketchy is of course my favorite Al Leong, who always looks like Al Leong. And thank God he looks like Al Leong. But yeah, he looks very sketchy to me. But maybe that's part of the gang's it's one of their secret weapons is and especially in LA, they're just a good looking bunch of guys who know 99 ways to kill you. So yeah.
Apparently.
And maybe Gruber just wants men, I want men who will appreciate a good suit, He's looking for men who are like him, It's like we're going to do this and do this wearing Armani. It's
Yes.
exactly. So, but yeah. So speaking of Al Leong, here was something I mentioned yesterday that maybe you and have talked about this with other guests, but one movie that this is similar to, and there's a connection with Al Leong, is Lethal Weapon.
Of course.
And Christmas time, lots
Shocking, shocking, shocking that you would make that connection.
yeah, right. Is there are these two movies happening in the same universe?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, 'cause so we could in a perfect world
Actually, no, they can't. Because his character will die in both. So yeah, it can't be. It's a
okay.
problem. Unless it's
So,
his twin brother.
or it's just, I mean, I mean that there could be an anomaly there, or he's cloned or something like that. But with the, and I believe it's Joel Silver was involved in both productions, so there's really your connection. But they just have such overlap, and I guess I don't know. To me, it'd be fun if Riggs and Murtaugh worked with McClane, or if. You
That
know,
would be
you
very
take the
interesting.
rogue cop to help another rogue cop. They wouldn't get along.
Right. In Lethal Weapon, his character's name was Endo, and here it's Uli.
Okay.
So
Well, that
they're brothers. That's as
they're
close as we
obvious.
can get.
Yeah, Endo and Uli. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's your connection. So, but yeah, I'm sure there's, I'm sure there have been, whole blogs about the similarities of the two movies, but they all it almost feels like it's almost too bad you don't have more characters who overlap
You're right. It's true.
but it's okay.
Okay. Yes, that it is. That is. All right. So the script there's a few as always, there's a few discrepancies. So first of all, it starts off by saying, hating himself, Powell disconnects, after he's talking to John. So it gives us more emotion to the fact that he doesn't want to really he didn't want to tell John to have to shut up, but he knows that it's the best thing to do.
Okay.
Then there's another point where when Hans is talking, he goes, "They'll be coming. Get ready, Theo. Watch the screens. Be our eyes and ears." Again, it's not needed. I think Hans says, "Wait until they're close," which he later on, alludes to that. He says, "Don't be impatient." But that's, that's next week. And then it says Eddie waves a card at the sensor, and a metal grid crashes into place. But in the movie, he uses a key there. The card was for the main door, but to drop those gates down, the porticlises, as I call them, is used by a key. So those are the small little changes there. Oh, so yeah. Every Friday I have a segment called Weekend Surprise, where one of the biggest debates that has revolved around Die Hard over the last 34 years since it came out is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? So what do you think, Brett? Is it a Christmas movie? Is it not? And show your work.
Yeah, I think it is a Christmas movie. I know, I think especially the last few years, there has been this tradition of showing, of binging on movies that might be set at Christmas. They don't have the deepest Christmas theme. Not too long ago, I saw a movie that was set during Christmas, but I almost feel like, they were out doing location shooting in New York and it was Christmas time. And so they just wrote that into the script but I really feel like Die Hard just has too many allusions to Christmas. It's got some Christmas themes. It's just not telegraphed in a way that's like a Hallmark movie. Here's a guy who is trying, in a sense, to come home or find his family at Christmas time or visit his family at Christmas time. And it works out in the end that he and Holly are going to have Christmas together. One thing that Die Hard is, you can make some similarities to, is another very un-Christmassy Christmas movie, and that's It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Which, it's a funny movie because everybody thinks of it as a Christmas movie, and Christmas is only really in the third act. And that's, it's sort of about, it's almost more like, they sing Auld Lang Syne at the end of
It's a Wonderful Life, yes.
It's a Wonderful Life, thank you. And it's almost more, both movies have a certain redemption because it's about Al getting a second chance and kind of atoning. There's a little bit of Charles Dickens here. That's why I feel like, it's got a Christmassy feeling because, A Christmas Carol isn't the most Christmassy movie.
Yeah.
So, I absolutely feel like because of its themes of murder and mayhem, of course, and explosions, but also a guy looking for his family and trying to figure out what's important in his life and going to extreme measures to do that. And then another guy who is dealing with some demons, and he gets to redeem himself at the end of this. And then we could probably make, Hans Gruber's probably a big fan of Krampus. I think it's very much a Christmas movie. And that I would also, I'll give a shout out to Gremlins, because I think that movie just has so many themes in it that, they may not be quote unquote traditional, but absolutely a Christmas movie. And I wish I could think of a few other movies that are just, Christmas is a setting, it's a backdrop, but it really doesn't figure that much into the plot. I bet you could probably come up with a few. I'm blank at the moment.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Yeah.
No problem.
Definitely a solid yes vote on Christmas movie.
All right. Excellent. So you want to, for one last time this season, tell people how they can get in touch with Brett Stillo.
Okay, well, I don't know, just look for me. At this point, I'll toot my own horn a little bit that I've been working on a low budget independent feature film, currently with the working title of Afterbirth. It's a horror movie, so hopefully you can look for me there, since I've been working on this thing. I didn't write it. A good friend of mine wrote it and produced it, and I got to direct it, which was pretty exciting, and I'm editing it and creating monsters, and hopefully 2023 will be the year of Afterbirth. Wow, that's a poster for you. So look for that.
There you go.
Unless
there you go. I should get credit for that too. There you go.
we'll give you a special thanks at the end, and then we'll do the special
there you go.
When we do the end titles. But yeah, hopefully soon I'll be saying look for Afterbirth. That sounds wrong. But that's the problem you're dealing with horror movie titles. But
yeah. Well, you're just saying look for the afterbirth, so that's fine. You know, saying look for afterbirth, so that's okay.
Yeah, that's a little
just
problem.
Make sure you don't have the in there, and you're good.
Yeah, I'm good. We're good. So that's, And I'm always up for a podcast because I love talking about movies. That's all I can talk about is movies. And so have Mike Will Travel.
All right. Excellent. And, since Brett and I are both part of the Movies by Minute community, so as Jim likes to tell people, you can find out about all the different movies that have been done Movies by Minute by going to the website moviesbyminutes.com. And you can see all of the currently there are 224 podcasts listed on the site, even though I know there are more because this one isn't listed there yet, so it should get there soon, hopefully it'll get there before it ends, but that's okay. I'm talking about this season. The first two seasons are on there separately also.
So
you can go there and you can find some of your favorite movies and listen to podcasts where people like Brett and I will dissect them minute by minute, or as Jim always says, if you look there and you find that your favorite movie is not there, you can go and create your own podcast, Movies by Minute. We have a great community that we all are connected over Facebook. We all help each other out when we can. And, it'd be great getting new blood, more crazy people like the rest of us.
Absolutely.
To be doing these type of things. Yeah. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Brett, thank you very much for joining me, especially on the short notice, as we mentioned at the beginning of the week. Thank you once again to Mike, but sorry, your episodes will not appear.
Sorry, Mike. But, yeah, thanks for having me. It was an absolute pleasure talking Die Hard with you.
Excellent. And I'll be back on Monday with a new guest. So until Monday, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yo.